listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. We've got a busy show this morning. We'll hear from Reef Larson, the founder of Future of Small Cities Institute, which has a program about the waterfront along the Hudson River in the cities of Hudson, Beacon, and Kingston. That's tonight in Troy. We'll also hear brand new music from the band Airwaves and older sounds from jazz legend Pharoah Sanders, who passed away last weekend. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate, and it all starts after Jason Martin is done with this song, and then it's time for the WGXC local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Turn out or tune in to two of the world's greatest percussionists performing in Catskill at the Avalon Lounge on October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Composers and percussionists Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt perform with a live web stream at WGXC.org. Turn out or tune in for Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt performing at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Sunday, October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Find out more in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit DedicatedPresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of One Universal Media of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Matt Martinez reports for the Berkshire Eagle that members of the Pittsfield, Massachusetts community gathered September 25th to remember Miguel Estrella, 6 months after he was killed by police. Attendees for the March for Miguel were encouraged to bring their ideas for keeping the community safe and for changing the way mental health crises are handled in the Berkshires. The march was organized by Manos Unadas, Roots and Dreams and Mustard Seeds, West Side Legends, the Berkshire Democratic Socialists of America, and the Maggie Sadoway Immigrant Cooperative. Gonzalo Bermudez, a member of Manos Unadas, said that Estrella's death resulted in a loss of trust between police and community members. Bermudez said many people are now hesitant to contact police. Quote, "That's a tragedy for the community," unquote, Bermudez said, quote, they might have a crisis, but they won't call the police because they know someone might end up dead, unquote. He said many in the Latino community are fearful that it could happen to them and called for, quote, urgent and necessary change, unquote, in the way that mental health crises are handled by first responders. Estrella, in the midst of a mental health crisis in March, was shot and killed by police after responding officers felt he was a threat. Estrella had a knife at the time he was shot. September 30th would have been his 23rd birthday. The police officer who shot him, Nicholas Sandrini, was found to be acting in self-defense by investigations from the Pittsfield Police Department and Berkshire District Attorney's Office. Quote, I've lost a sibling, but I've gained a community that sees exactly what I see, a need for change, unquote, said Elena Estrella, Miguel's sister. Quote, a change Miguel deserved and a change that we all deserve. This march may not mean that much to many, but it means so much for us, unquote. Read the full story in the Berkshire Eagle.
The Daily Freeman reports that new congressperson Pat Ryan introduced his first bill in the House of Representatives after 9 days in office. Ryan, a Democrat, filling in the final weeks of Antonio Delgado's term in the 9th Congressional District, introduced the Protecting Reproductive Freedom Act. The bill would allow access to abortion medication through telehealth, even in states that banned abortion, and would create a congressional report on other ways to expand access to reproductive health care. Ryan said in a press release, and I quote, a woman's right to choose is one of this country's foundational freedoms, and there is no place for government interference in these private medical decisions. Yet extremist state lawmakers are restricting access to FDA-approved abortion medication and even threatening to open Americans' mail to stop the delivery of doctor-prescribed health care services. This legislation would ensure that women across the country can access this safe and effective medical treatment, end quote. Over half of all abortion care in the U.S. comes through medication, with the two-dose regimen of mifepristone or misoprostol approved for up to 10 weeks of pregnancy. This year, at least 20 states have proposed bills to restrict or ban access to those abortion pills, which were approved more than two decades ago by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and other new bills would force women to get those medications from a doctor in person. Ryan beat Republican Mark Molinaro in a special election to fill the final weeks of Delgado's term, and many political observers said his support for abortion rights was a key part of that campaign. Now Ryan is running for the new 18th Congressional District against Republican Colin Schmidt in November, while Molinaro faces Democrat Josh Riley in the new 19th Congressional District. Schmidt did not respond to requests for comment. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
With the Supreme Court overturning the Roe v. Wade decision earlier this year, views on abortion laws have been center stage in every election in America since. And that continues this fall in the new New York 19th Congressional District contest between Republican Mark Molinaro and Democrat Josh Riley. Molinaro lost a special election for the old version of the district in August to Democrat Pat Ryan. Many political observers wrote that Democratic turnout was up in that race because of the abortion issue. Riley has been clear that he supports abortion rights, and his campaign website says, quote, women's health care decisions are women's health care decisions, not the government's, unquote. Molinaro's campaign website avoids the issue completely in the policy section. Molinaro has said he opposes most abortions after 17 weeks. Quote, I don't want government in the specific decision-making that women will have to make. I don't, unquote, Molinaro said at the September 1st town hall meeting with voters in Endicott in Broome County. Quote, but I also want to be respectful of the fact that at some point there ought to be some limitation, except in the case of life of the mother, rape, and incest, unquote. His 17-week limit is very close to the 15-week abortion ban that South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham recently proposed. Just after Molinaro lost to Ryan, he appeared on the right-wing Newsmax network, which has reported conspiracy theories and lets guests incorrectly state that the 2020 presidential election was, quote, stolen, unquote. And he was asked about the abortion issue.
Rather than avoiding the topic, I think we have to talk honestly about whether we are male or female candidates. what we believe and why we believe it and connect with people on this issue. I do think that is an important lesson. You know, the world changed, and whether you were identified as pro-life or pro-choice, whether you agreed with the Supreme Court decision or not, having an honest conversation about it, about what we value in life and about life, I think is important for Republicans. I think that we have to connect with people and explain to them that we care deeply about this this issue and how now do we navigate the new landscape.
Philip Pantuso reports for the Times Union about how the fraud allegations against former President Donald Trump in a lawsuit filed by New York Attorney General Letitia James include the Trump National Golf Club Hudson Valley in the Dutchess County hamlet of Hopewell Junction. Four of the alleged schemes outlined in the lawsuit involved the Dutchess County location and are described as the, and I quote, fixed asset scheme, the unsold membership scheme, the membership deposit scheme, and the brand premium scheme, end quote. The lawsuit alleges that Trump and his associates did not disclose the leasehold interest on the property, and I quote, misleadingly suggesting, end quote, that the organization owned the property outright and failing to account for ground lease expenses when determining the value of the property between 2011 and 2021. And while listed initiation fee for 2011 and 2012 at Trump National Hudson Valley was $10,000, the Trump organization claimed there were as much as 300% more. The lawsuit also alleges that Trump inflated the purchase price of the club by claiming that the liability for $1.2 million in refundable membership deposits was zero. And finally, the lawsuit claims Trump artificially inflated the value of Trump National Hudson Valley because of his name, despite the fact that including internally developed intangible brand premiums is not allowed by a generally accepted accounting principles. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
TheUpstater.com is reporting that U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona has named Ellesmere Elementary School a 2022 National Blue Ribbon School. This is the second time the kindergarten to fifth grade school has earned the national honor. The first time was in 2013. Ellesmere is one of five elementary schools in the Bethlehem Central School District. The district serves more than 4,000 students from the towns of Bethlehem and New Scotland in Albany County. The National Blue Ribbon Schools program honors public and private elementary, middle, and high schools where students perform at very high levels or where significant improvements are being made in students' level of achievement. The 39-year-old program recognizes schools in one of two performance categories, exemplary high performing and exemplary achievement gap closing schools. Ellesmere is being acknowledged in the exemplary high-performing category for having students who have demonstrated outstanding overall academic achievement. Nationwide, 264 schools are being honored in the same category. Quote, "We are thrilled to hear the news today," unquote, said Ellesmere principal Kate Kloss. Quote, "Though it is our second time receiving this honor, somehow it feels particularly special today in 2022. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
Diane Baldwin reports in the Columbia paper, the September 24th kickoff volunteer event to celebrate the expansion of the Ancrem Opera House was postponed due to a COVID-19 outbreak. The Ancrem Opera House has acquired an adjacent property at 1326 County Route 7, which they will call the Annex, and call the Opera House and the Annex combined the Ancrem Center for the Arts. The Annex is a now-vacant 1,300-square-foot, two-story post and beam structure built in 1780 on 0.08 acres. Ancrem Opera House co-director Jeffrey Masao said in a press release, and I quote, "This expansion is in direct response to the community request for expanded programming and opportunities. It reflects our already thriving programs, a commitment to sustaining them, and an investment in our future as a vital resource for Ancrem and beyond," end quote. The plan is to build a link between the two buildings that will cost $346,400. In 2021, the Ancrem Opera House produced 90 productions, concerts, and workshops with approximately 1,700 attending in person or online. Read the full story in the Columbia paper.
The Daily Freeman is reporting that the Bizzle Pet Foundation is planning an Empty the Shelters event from October 1st through October 8th at shelters including the Ulster County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in the town of Ulster and Animalkind in Hudson. The event will allow adopters the chance to bring a pet home for a reduced fee, with the Bizzle Pet Foundation pitching in the remaining adoption cost. The Bizzle Pet Foundation's Empty the Shelters events have helped more than 117,700 pets find homes since 2016. More than 280 shelters in 42 states will participate in the upcoming event. Participation dates and requirements for adoption during the event will vary by shelter. Information is available at bizzlepetfoundation.org and at the websites for individual shelters. The Ulster County SPCA is located at 20 Weedy Drive in Ulster, and Animalkind is located at 721 Warren Street in Hudson. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Mid-Hudson News reports that Ulster County is looking for artists with design proposals for a COVID-19 memorial. The COVID-19 Commemoration Commission will choose a sculpture as the centerpiece of a memorial garden at the Ulster County Fairground Complex in New Plains. Artists can submit designs through November 15th. Acting County Executive Johanna Contreras said, and I quote, "This unprecedented time took its toll, but it also showed the shared strength of our communities who came together and persevered through the pandemic. This project will culminate not just in a simple monument, but a testament to hope, unity, and a lasting message for future generations," end quote. Designs can be submitted by mail or in person to the office of Ulster County Executive at 244 Fair Street, Kingston, New York, 12401, or through the Ulster County COVID-19 website. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Tuesday, a slight chance of showers after 1 p.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 67 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 47 degrees. And on Wednesday, a chance of showers mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 65 degrees. And Wednesday night, a chance of showers before 8 p.m. It will be partly cloudy with the temperature low of around 46 degrees. And that's your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at WGXC on Tuesday, September 27th, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. Reef Larson, the founder of Future of Small Cities Institute, previews a show about the Hudson River waterfront in Hudson, Beacon, and Kingston that is later on this evening in Troy. Then at 11 a.m., it's time for the Early Electro Mix Show with tracks today from Lejarne Hiller, Cecil Luter, and Philip Menard, among others. Then at noon, after the local news, Rob Saffer's Overlook Show celebrates the birthday of reed player John Gilmore, composer and band leader. At 2 p.m., there's Acid Jazz. At 3 p.m., the Radio Art Hour features works from Alessandro Bazzetti, John J. H. Phillips, and The Weeknd. At 7 p.m. on Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, there's a special on Australian cinema. And at 8 p.m., on the Mostly Single Show, Michael Wilde welcomes back author-collector Andrew Kirvin, author of Wild Youth, Punk and New Wave from the 1970s and 1980s, on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To
get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Saturday, October 22nd, come out to Wave Farm and view the installations. It's part of WGXC's Fall Pledge Drive. Noon to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 22nd, Wave Farm will welcome drop-in visitors for tours of the campus, including WGXC Acre Studio and the many installations on the property that employ radio in some way. Also, community members and local nonprofit organizations can come by to record public service announcements to air on 90.7 FM, and members of the public can record a station ID for WGXC. Again, that's Wave Farm is open for visits on Saturday, October 22nd during the WGXC Fall Pledge Drive from noon to 6 p.m. Go to WGXC.org for more information, and we'll see you on Saturday, October 22nd at Wave Farm. Listening to Quintron's Weather Warlock. Live stream of an analog drone synthesizer played by the weather, made by the New Orleans-based artist Quintron. You can listen to the Quintron Weather Warlock take the changes in weather at Wave Farm in Greene County and hear it anytime, 24 hours a day, at wavefarm.org/listen. Go to any WGXC.org webpage and click on the listen button to hear Quintron's Weather Warlock, turning the changes in precipitation and sunlight and wind and temperature into sound.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, September 27th. Local early morning temperatures range from 45 degrees in Lexington to 51 in Tivoli. Regional average soil temperature is 59 degrees. A dry morning gives way to a chance of rain this afternoon. A high of 68 is expected to linger from 1 to 4 p.m. Overnight, it should be dry with a low of 48 degrees. Tomorrow, rainy afternoon with a high of 65. Overnight, 49 degrees. Then we see 61 on Thursday with dry conditions. 43 degrees overnight takes us into a dry Friday with a high of 66. Pollen levels for today will be low. Yes, it's still in play, but as conditions change, that may go away, especially after we start doing the Friday fall forecasts. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:10 a.m., low tide at 11:02 a.m., high tide again at 4:38 p.m., and low tide once again at 11:26 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 66 degrees, and the current will be strong. Sunset today will be at 6:32 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:44 a.m. Looking way up, we see an incoming plasma stream is expected to cause geomagnetic disturbances this weekend. Solar wind speed is currently 490.7 kilometers per second at 7.8 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible for all frequencies in the range being monitored, which is 0 to 60 megahertz. This is due to an unexpected coronal mass ejection impact causing issues. Overnight, we're fair below 15 megahertz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 6, storm level. The current sunspot number is 120, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Rob Gellis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the video rental store in your mind.
Looking for something to watch, but feeling overwhelmed by all the options?
Feeling unsatisfied with all the boring, restrictive categories like romance and drama or horror?
Tune in to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda every second and fourth Tuesday at 7 p.m. and get turned on to movie genres like eco-horror,
unsettling kids' movies,
alien boyfriends,
creepy therapy.
Start listening so you can start watching today.
All the candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing apart. We know every card by heart. All the candlelights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it. Tonight, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Our last president wanted to eliminate it every couple of days. Our current president talks about it on Twitter all the time.
Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema says they're both wrong. The moderate argues the legislative tactic avoids all-or-nothing political battles, which result in no action.
The importance of the 60-vote threshold is to ensure that no one gets everything they want, that you compromise, that you find that middle ground. And by doing so, you're much more likely to pass legislation that stands the test of time, that will not be reversed when the next party gains power.
Sinema spoke at Republican Senator Mitch McConnell's Academic Center.
She is today what we have too few of in the Democratic Party, a genuine moderate and a deal maker.
Democrats criticize Sinema for aligning with Republicans. Sinema, along with Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, have blocked several key Democratic policy bills, proving to be the most influential members of the 50-50 divided chamber. The Congressional Budget Office is putting a $400 billion price tag on the Biden administration's federal student loan forgiveness plan. It would forgive $10,000 for borrowers earning up to $125,000 and $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients. Conservative groups call it a handout and are considering legal action, but Democratic Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley argues it will change and save lives.
I get emotional thinking about the profound impact this will have for our families, especially families that have been systematically denied the opportunity to own or build generational wealth.
An estimated 43 million borrowers share about $1.6 trillion in student debt. Michigan Congressman Andy Levin's staff became the first to vote to form a union under a new House rule. Workers in the offices of California Democrat Ro Khanna and Minnesota Democrat Ilhan Omar also have votes scheduled this week. Days after threatening to escalate the war in Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin granted former NSA contractor Edward Snowden citizenship in his country, where he's been living in exile. Snowden is accused of espionage for leaking intelligence information to the media. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said the United States position hasn't changed, and Snowden should return to the U.S. to face justice.
Perhaps the only thing that has changed is that as a result of his Russian citizenship, apparently now he may well be conscripted to fight in Russia's war in Ukraine.
Snowden faces up to 30 years in prison in the U.S. Florida is bracing for Hurricane Ian's landfall, which could hit Tampa by mid-Wednesday. Governor Ron DeSantis activated thousands of National Guard members.
We've issued waivers of weight restrictions for commercial trucks to ensure we have ample fuel and resources coming into Florida. Make sure you're prepared. There's no need to panic buy.
Along with winds of 100 miles per hour or more, Florida's west coast could see life-threatening storm surges. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. If you're not registered to vote, today we're giving you some basic guidelines on registering, who qualifies, how a criminal record can affect registration, and resources for getting more specific information. All states require that you be a U.S. citizen and 18 years old to vote. Some states, like Connecticut, allow you to register at 17 if you will be 18 by Election Day. States including Florida and Hawaii allow registration at 16, but still require you to be 18 to vote. In many states, you must be living in that state for 30 days or more to register, such as Montana, Michigan, or Mississippi. New Hampshire and Oklahoma consider whether you are domiciled in those states, spending most of your time over the year in that state. If you are incarcerated, convicted of a felony, on parole, or even have completed your sentence, whether you can register varies widely. For most states, if you're currently incarcerated for a felony or have been convicted of an election crime, you can't vote. In some states like Missouri, that felony can keep you from voting ever. In states like Maryland or Massachusetts, completing your sentence and parole reinstates your rights. If you're allowed to register, in most states you'll need a government-issued ID, proof of your citizenship, which in most cases can be the ID, and proof of your residence like tax and utility bills. Do it now, not later. Check with your local election office. Links to a list of requirements for all 50 states can be found at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
My little egg.
Cass McCombs sitting in there with the band Airwaves on the Alien song from the 2022 album The Dance on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine, Rafe Larson. You're here to tell us about two interesting events that your organization, Future of Small Cities Institute, has coming up. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me again. Always lovely to be here. Yeah, so we have two really exciting events, and both of these coincide with our current exhibition that's at the Focus Lab, which is on Hudson waterfronts. And that exhibit is wrapping up at the end of October. So if you haven't seen it yet, definitely go check it out. So the first event is on Tuesday, September 27th at 6 p.m., and we've invited a really cool group of folks who work and live in the Hudson Valley and have been instrumental in activating their waterfronts. So this is the eternal challenge for cities, right? Is first you have to develop the waterfront, and this often has involved like transforming these waterfronts from derelict industrial polluted spaces to recreational spaces, to park spaces, to provide accessibility to your citizens. But that's really just sort of the first step, because you have to almost retrain people to think about the river as a place that you would want to go, that you would want to be, that you would want to hang around and be around other people. So there's a whole layer of activation, which has to do with programming, which has to do with partnerships and collaborations. So, for instance, a really good example of this is Adam Weinert, who's one of the founders of the Hudson Arts Coalition, was instrumental in bringing about Waterfront Wednesdays, which goes on every Wednesday in the city of Hudson during the warmer months, and features like guest artists and puppetry and dancing, music, and it's a really diverse crowd that comes down to the waterfront. There's a lot of boats there that offer boat rides, kayaking, all kinds of things like that.
Oh, interesting. The waterfront that takes place in Hudson.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was just there, and it felt like this is a space that has so much potential but is separated by the train station, and it wasn't really utilized. This was for the Latinx festival that just happened. So in Hudson specifically, with that railroad, what is the obstacle there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple obstacles down there, and, you know, there's a sort of almost like a breaker. The railroad is one of them, but there's like a kind of break space between the downtown Hudson and the waterfront itself. So this Waterfront Wednesdays was one of the ways to get people down there and have an excuse to go down there. And I think the question of accessibility, which is one certainly that is very on the mind in Albany, right, where you have a giant highway sort of blocking waterfront access for many people, is big. And I think to surmount obstacles like that, you have to have reasons for people to come down. One, you have to make it easy, and two, you have to make it seem like it's worth it. So all these cities have these challenges. Julie Noble, who's the sustainability coordinator for the city of Kingston, they've done a ton of work around Kingston Point Park, which is another one of these kind of formerly industrial spaces that has been really activated. They have a comprehensive waterfront plan called Weaving the Waterfront, where they've done a lot of outreach. I think one of the challenges about waterfronts in general is that every municipality has their own sort of set of plans. And it's hard to have a sort of regional approach to the waterfront, even though watersheds are regional by definition, right? The ecosystem doesn't know any municipal boundaries. So really, we should be planning regionally and kind of have this kind of comprehensible string of plans so that you can go up and down the Hudson and have a sense of linkage between these places. So Julie will be talking about Kingston, all the work they've done around their Weaving the Waterfront plan. And then Jeff, he's the director of land use and advocacy at Scenic Hudson. He's worked a lot on Beacon. Scenic Hudson's done a ton of work at Beacon. But he was also instrumental in trying to develop one of these plans called the Revitalizing Hudson Waterfronts Plan. And I think he'll talk about some of the challenges of, okay, we had this great plan. Now how do we sort of get people to buy into it? Because everyone has their own sort of set of agendas. And I think why this particular event is going to be really informative for the Capital Region is that I feel like we're a little bit behind in activating our waterfronts in general. You know, Troy has some really cool, they just had that walkway and that seawall that they put in. Albany is grappling with its legacy of 787 and trying to figure out what to do with its waterfront. But I think looking a little bit down south to our neighbors will give us a lot of working models for what we can and what we should do and what's possible.
Something that I've thought about is, once these waterfront spaces have been activated, do they become magnets for the elite? Are they no longer welcoming to everybody?
It's a really big question of, you know, all these kind of development projects, you know, and whether they're green or blue development projects, the specter of gentrification looms large, right? As soon as you beautify a brownfield zone or a formerly derelict waterfront, what happens to housing prices, rent prices, etc. I think it's a really good one, and it's one that cities which have long sort of abandoned and ignored their waterfronts need to grapple with. Like, okay, they're suddenly realizing this is valuable real estate. Who is it for? Is waterfront space now market rate housing? Is it public space? Is it a mixture of the two? And I think that's why this question of, like, what do we do with our waterfronts? How do we bring people to the waterfronts is also a question of inclusion, right? What is the programming for? Is it, you know, is it a Latinx festival? Is it a farmer's market? Who are those audiences for those two kind of shows? How can we interweave them? So the programming aspect, I think, and who you're partnering with for the waterfronts becomes a big part of this question. How do we designate space that is inclusive for all, and don't put up the kind of invisible fences that often accompanies some of these projects, right?
I think also what you were saying is a big part of, if you revitalize a waterfront, then probably the housing around there, the lower income just gets pushed away. So it's not so much maybe about the welcoming of the area itself, but that certain demographics have them further to travel to actually visit these areas.
Yeah. And that's going to play out in really interesting ways in Troy, right? Because Lansingburg and South Troy, which, you know, are neighborhoods that have had a history of disinvestment, also have a ton of waterfront, right? So that's one of the assets of both those neighborhoods. So, you know, as we develop some of those neighborhoods, parts of those neighborhoods, how do we not displace? I think that's always the question. It's a huge question. And I think any sort of waterfront development, which includes residential areas, needs to have that affordable housing component be like the first step. The Albany Riverfront Collaborative, which is a group that's proposing boulevarding 787, in their sort of initial plans, which are not prescriptive, but more of like, look what could happen, there's 94 acres of space that's reclaimed from the highway. All those interchanges would be taken down. What do you do with those 94 acres? What goes in there? Is it green space? Is it climate resilient space? Is it public parks? Is it commercial space? Is it market rate housing? Is it affordable housing? So that figuring out that alchemy goes to the heart of what are the future of these cities.
Before we run out of time, there's a second event coming up, October 6th, Wind Shipped, a documentary that follows the low carbon sail freight schooner Apollonia. And I believe I learned about the schooner Apollonia in your Focus Lab. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yeah. We have a whole cabinet devoted to the Apollonia. I love this boat. I love this project in part because, you know, the Focus Lab show on waterfronts begins with sort of indigenous understandings of the watershed and of the tidal estuary, which, you know, the river was used as this sort of transportation corridor for indigenous peoples. They deeply understood the notion of the tides and the current. And while we use it as a transportation corridor during the age of industrialization, I think it was largely ignored as a sort of watershed. The Apollonia is a sail freight boat, so it moves goods, local goods, from the Hudson Valley down to New York City, completely using wind power. And then when they get to their port of call, they'll use a solar-powered e-bike to transport goods like malt and cider and maple syrup and all kinds of really interesting, you know, local goods from the Hudson Valley to these farmers markets, including ones in the city. And, you know, there's the question of like, will this make a difference, right? Most freight is shipped by train, by truck primarily, and goes by the model of like, you know, overnight, right? You click on that button on Amazon, you get it the next day. Sam Merritt, who's the captain, is really positing the model of sail freight is we're going to take a little bit longer than a day, but we'll give back in many, many more ways. You know who's literally handling your freight. You know who we're going to call on. It's a transaction that's personal, that's low carbon, that's community driven, and that's embracing the Hudson River as the future highway. And so while there's one ship out there now, well, maybe a couple, there could be 100 that would be in direct sort of contrast to the kind of exploitative, you know, Amazon Prime model, right? So it's a really interesting ecological case study, freight case study, economic case study, community case study. The film is by John Bauermaster, who's a master filmmaker who's done a whole series of really interesting films on the Hudson River and environmental issues. He'll be there. So this is the Capital Region premiere. I really recommend it.
Thank you so much, Rafe Larson. Futureofsmallcities.org is your website. And those events are taking place. The conversation is on
Tuesday, September 27th. And then the Windship screening, which is free but limited tickets, is on Thursday, October 6th.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rafe.
Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thank you.
Every time.